and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, herbalist and author Beverly Gray explores the use of wild medicinal and edible plants for health and healing in a presentation hosted by Alaska Public Media along with Alaska Pacific University. Beverly shares her many years of experience gathering wild plants and weeds to use as food and medicines for the body, mind, and spirit. This talk was recorded at Alaska Pacific University on May 29th and has been shortened for broadcast. Without further ado, here's herbalist Beverly Gray.
So I live in the boreal, and it's the world's largest terrestrial ecosystem on the planet, and it extends unbroken except for oceans around the whole top of the earth, including here in Alaska. A little more coastal here, but as you go inland, you can see really the difference in the forest. So the boreal biome covers 14 million square kilometers through Russia, Scandinavia, different parts of Asia as well, and northern North America, including Alaska, Canada, and of course it's characterized by its cool soil. And of course we all know we have short growing seasons, but intense growing seasons, so we get nice big vegetables. I know where I live, the soil is quite acidic, so you're always, putting compost and, poop and stuff like that in it from animals like llamas and cows and sheep and things like that. So the boreal forest is the largest carbon storehouse, and this is one of the dangers of it going on fire. I mean, if we have a fire, there's a lot of carbon released into the atmosphere. So it contains 1.5 million lakes and 80% of the world's unfrozen fresh water. So fringing on the northern part of the planet, the boreal forest is a vast, rich, and it's very rich in plant and animal life, and its ecology has been essential to the dietary, medicinal, and spiritual health of indigenous peoples around the circumpolar north for thousands of years. And so in the Yukon alone, there are 14 different First Nations with 8 language groups stemming from 2 major languages families, so the Athapascan and the Tlingit. And the Gwich'in people of Old Crow have been there for at least 15,000 years. So it's very, very old culture, and it's the only fly-in community in the Yukon. And it is so incredibly beautiful. So while I was there, it was a cultural technology camp. And so herbal medicine is part of the cultural technology of the Vantek Gwich'in. So in the Yukon, of course, we have a human population of around 30,000 souls, and that would, fit into a few city blocks like of this city, perhaps. So of course, trees. We've got lots of spruce in the Yukon, like you do here as well. And of course, very high in beta carotene, starch, sugars, vitamin C, and it's that lemony flavor which is really the vitamin C. Also, of course, the plant is very camphoraceous, right? When you eat a spruce tip or you drink a spruce tip tea, or even when you walk into a spruce forest, what you get is just you just want to breathe. So it's quite incredible how much spruce has influenced our lives sometimes without us even knowing, right? So another thing, so when you smell eat the spruce tips, and when you smell the oil, you can really feel your whole, your lungs opening up, and that's the camphor in that. So what's that tell us? Well, boy, this is really great to prevent, coughs, any kind of respiratory congestion. Of course, when you're getting vitamin C, your immune system is a lot stronger. So you're really, really getting to benefit from the plant. And I, probably like most of you guys here, I use the spruce in every way, shape, or form, right? My house is a log spruce house, local spruce logs. I use the tips, of course. I use the bark to make crackers that my friend Lila Speak from northern Sweden, who saw me, gave me the recipe for the book, in my book, the pine bark crackers. So you can use the bark. You can use the lichen, the usnea lichen, of course, on the trees is antimicrobial, and so it's antiviral, fungal, and bacterial. So this whole, and of course, We have clean air because of it, and it's just such an incredible plant to use. This week I was teaching the Pathfinders. They're like girl guides, a group of gals, and they needed to get their nature badge and they needed to get their women in business badge. So they came to see me and they came to my little shop, and then we went out in the bush and one of the girls got a little puncture wound in her leg. Well, we were just doing the teachings on yarrow. So it was fantastic because everything happened in right order. And so it was like, okay, well, just let's get the yarrow leaves. You macerate them, chew them up. And then there was plantain, and we put that over as the bandage, and it stopped the bleeding immediately. And it was like, bam, lesson. She will never forget that as long as she lives. She will use that as medicine. And I thought, wow, that was just perfect timing. And all the girls there will remember that as well. They'll always remember that plant, just like I always remember the pitch after that, you know? So it's very good. So birch is an incredible tree. I'm of Irish descent, and of course I work with the Celtic tree alphabet, and birch is the first letter in the Celtic tree alphabet. And it's widely used. And of course my name is Bev, so the letter B is three lines to the left of a line, you know, and it's a very old language. And it's called Blythe in the old Irish name. But here it's Betula neolascana. And of course, the beautiful clear liquid that comes out of the tree is the first tonic. So it is the first. So in an energetic meaning, in the old ways, is that it is for renewal, for cleansing. So it's got a really deep spiritual meaning as well. So it's not, you know, as we're eating this food, this wild food and this wild medicine, we're getting nourished on every level, not just our bodies, but our mind and our spirit. And it keeps us really whole and healthy. So you can see it's got riboflavin, zinc, manganese, calcium, thiamine, magnesium, and potassium. And of course, very anti-inflammatory, antiseptic, astringent. It's great for people who have joint problems, you know, swelling in the joints. And it's a diaphoretic, so it helps your body to sweat if you're getting a cold or flu. And a diuretic, so if you retain water. And a hemostatic, and of course, a tonic. I have a funny story. When I got to Rampart House up in off of Old Crow on the Porcupine River, there was an elder there, and he was sitting under a tree, and he was really funny. He was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to come to the plant teachings. I don't know. And he said, so, what could I use for, I have this abscess tooth, and it's like draining pus, and it's not very healthy. But he wants to stay in the bush for the summer. He's not going to Old Crow, and he's certainly not going to Whitehorse. So he was leaning up against a birch tree. So I just pointed up. And he goes, I said, just chew the leaf and stick it in there. So he did. And I'm sure he must have known those teachings. And I figured my job was just to be there to help, you know, him remember. That was all. And so anyway, he took that, and about a half an hour later, after he chewed it, he says, okay, I'll come. And you could see it was draining. So he was, every half hour he's pulling out. By the time that I had left, it had almost like fully drained and it started to heal up. So after that, it was like, you need to then use the yarrow, because the yarrow then will help to seal it up. So quite an incredible plant, birches. So using the leaves, of course, everybody knows it's used in basket making and canoe making as well. And then, of course, we have willow, and willow, we have it here. It's all over the Yukon. It's all over the world. There's 36 different types in the Yukon, and when I was writing the book, I was trying to identify all of them, and I was going to have a willow page, and I had great ideas. And then I went and saw our local botanist, and I said, gosh, Bruce, I don't know, like, all these willows, I'm just having a blah, 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 you know, and he said, don't worry about it. He said, like, you know, most of the botanists in the community as well don't know all of the trees. It's hard to key out. They start to interbreed. And so, like, don't worry about it. I thought, okay. He said, they all have salicylic acid in it. And that's right, they do. So, you know, don't worry about what kind of willow it is. So, of course, aspirin contains a willow-like substance. Yeah, the willow tincture, of course, is fantastic. Basically, it is taking the bark and the leaves and soaking it in either alcohol or vinegar, and extracting the salicylic acid from the plant. And it works great. You can use it topically, of course, because it's an analgesic. It's very anti-inflammatory. It's also an antioxidant. So, anytime we can get antioxidants in our body, that's fantastic, It's antiseptic, so you can use it to help clean any wounds that you have. It's also very bitter, so you get those bitter flavonoids in it. And so it's good for the digestive system, and it absorbs into the body very quickly. So it's also a tonic as well, and it helps to stop bleeding. So, it is, because it's an analgesic, you can take it internally. You can also put it on topically. You put it in your bath as well. You can add it to food if you like. So there's lots of different ways that you can use this plant. It's also great for insect bites. Anytime you get a bite in the forest, a lot of people say, oh, plantain, that's the first plant you go to. But if you can't find plantain, use anything green, because the chlorophyll in the plant will neutralize the acid, whether it's a nettle sting or a bug bite. So yeah, it's very good. Also, you can make a tea with the leaves and with the bark for any kind of urinary tract infection. Arctostaphylos uvaerosi is another great plant for that. Bearberry grows on sunny, dry slopes throughout the Yukon. My whole hillside's covered with it. So the first plant besides birch that we get out and harvest, in the Yukon, it's the buds, probably most like here. Most people make a salve from it, and they call it balm of Gilead. We call it boreal balm. And my great-great-grandfather, his last name was Mitchell, and there's arguments about what his first name was. Anyway, he made a balsam called Mitchell's Genuine Balsam, and it was made out of the poplar buds. And I have a pamphlet from 1800s of all the claims that he was making on it, and using it for horses and different livestock for cuts and wounds and for pain, and so it was fantastic. So anyway, you pick the buds, you infuse them in the oil, and that draws out the medicine, and you can see there's so much resin. And add it to oil and beeswax, or if you're lucky enough to have bear fat or any other, like goose fat or something like that, you can also use the those kind of fats to infuse the oil. So of course, as we all go out and gather, we really, we like to start our collections. And I'd always like to say, that herbal medicine is the people's medicine. And I used to think, okay, every community should have an herbalist. But as I've traveled and got out in the world in the last years, my kids are grown, and really been talking to lots of different people about plants, I really, really feel that no, not every community, every household needs an herbalist, And for the reason that this is a really basic life skill. It is easy, it's not complicated. Working with herbal medicine is, about that interrelationship. And, here in Alaska, as in the Yukon, you walk out your front door, well, there's spruce. There's spruce, there's all the medicine we need right there, right? So connect with that spruce tree in your yard. Connect with the rowan tree. Connect with what is growing around you, because that is your medicine. And it is really, really important. Plants, like people, they want to be seen. They want to have an interaction. There is that deep connection that we can move into with the plants. And so when we harvest and gather for food and medicine, that it is much more potent than anything you're going to buy in a health food store, because you've set the intention, you've asked permission, you've given an offering. And the First Nation in my community will give tobacco. Up in Old Crow, they give matches or tea. And I was taught by a young girl, she was about 7, and I was teaching a group of kids, and I was leaving tobacco. But because I used to smoke when I was younger, I had this addiction. And so it was hard for me to work with it. You know, now I'm okay, but it was hard for me. And so she said, oh, Bev, just give your hair. And so I always give a piece of my hair now. And so my hair is all over the world. And I feel really good about that practice for myself. But we all have our own ways, because our parents, our mothers taught us how to say please and how to say thank you. And that's that same relationship of respect that we have with forests, with plants, when we're gathering. Herbs. So this is Artemisia frigida, and often people call it wormwood, prairie sagewort, pasture sage, mountain sage, or female sage, and some people call it stink grass as well. So of course it's very aromatic, and the number one thing I have used this plant for is I used to make a bug spray called Buzz Off, but then Health Canada took it off the market, and then I called it Skedaddle, and then they took that off the market. And not because it didn't work, and not because it had any nasty ingredients, only because DEET owns the logo to the mosquito, and also because I'm not DEET, and so you have to, so there, in Canada we have the Natural Health Products Directorate, and it's really quite bureaucratic heavy, so small grassroots companies like myself and others have a difficult time getting this beautiful products out there. So this ended up, the bug spray ended up under PMRA, which is Pesticide Management Review Agency. So. So basically, I need to behave like a large pharmaceutical or a large chemical company in order to sell it on the market. So what I'm doing is telling people, okay, make your own bug spray. And what you do is, you gather the wild sage or the Artemisia, and you take it and you break it off really carefully. Then you take it and then you rub it all over your skin, and then you stick some in your hair, and then you're good. So that's it. You don't need a bottle. You don't need a spray. All you need is the plant. And it works perfectly. Of course, the reason it's called wormwood is because it helps to rid the body of pinworms. So that's a good thing. If you've ever had pinworms or had children who had pinworms, it can be really uncomfortable. So drinking the tea of it. Of course, when you're working with children, there's always, it's a different story, right? We're making a tea for ourselves, we're drinking it. But when you're working with children, your own children, or if you have a practice, if you're a naturopath or an herbalist, then it looks very differently. So for myself, I would use a teaspoon of the herb in a cup of water 3 times a day. But for a child, you would use like 3 drops. So it's very different. So it's really important when you're working with others to be really mindful of their age. Are they a child or are they an elder? Are they, do they have any other diseases? It's like, do they have diabetes or heart disease? Is there any contraindications? You know, this plant shouldn't be used when a woman's pregnant. So there's lots of different little subtleties. But once, you start to study each plant, you start to know what they are, what they're for. So it's always best to start with yourself and really learn each plant as you go and know what its subtleties are. So this is a bluebell, of course, and it's called Mertensia, and it's commonly known as lungwort. And the other day when I was with the young Pathfinder girls, I said to them, how about everybody take the leaf, and then once you have your leaf, why don't you touch it? I want you to touch that leaf. I want you to look at it. I want you to smell it. Like, just really, check it out. See what kind of shape is it? What's it really feel like? What's it look like? And so once you start to look at the plant, you go, wow, it does kind of look like it has these veins, which are like little villi, and there's like little hairs on the back. And also, in the old days, the old people, long time ago, they, of course, used the doctrine of signatures. And what the doctrine of signatures is that God had stamped what the plant was used for on the leaves, on the bark, on the flowers. So it was like, oh yeah, these are kind of like lungs. And the way that the flowers hang down You know, that's kind of, you know, it's, they're very lung-like. And so the plant got a common name called lungwort. And so then, you know, as time goes on, people went, well, you know, gosh, if God stamped what this is for, we better try it, you know, got to listen to that. So they started listening to it and making teas and eating the plants and went, okay, this has helped clear up my lung congestion. Wow, this is when I was sick, I started to feel better. So that's Hortensia. So you see this everywhere right now. So what I encourage you to do is to dry it and drink it as tea or to tincture it. So put it in alcohol, or if you're alcohol sensitive, put it in vinegar. Vinegar is great because vinegar pulls the minerals out. And so then you're getting minerals, and if you use apple cider vinegar is the best. So you just soak like two parts vinegar to one part of the leaves and flowers. This is plant is in the comfrey family. So if you're familiar with comfrey, comfrey is a great plant for healing wounds. It's called nipbone, and this is the northern version of it. So it's really exciting to have a northern variety of plant, like Hortensia, that can help with the lungs and, of course, help with healing wounds. Labrador tea, in Old Crow they call it Lidia Maskith. And the last time I was in Old Crow, I was with the elder Ruth Welsh, who wrote the foreword to my book. And she's since passed, and I miss her dearly. We used to have beautiful conversations. And just this last weekend, I have a video of her picking Lidia Maskith, and I was talking to her up on Crow Mountain. And I'm saying, Ruth, like, she was up there 5 minutes and her bag was this full. And it was like the spring growth, so it wasn't like the fall growth. And she's like, I've been doing it for like 72 years. Of course it's full. Like, you know, she had it just, it was just great. So, you know, Labrador tea, of course, again, it's high in minerals. Does it grow down like in this part? Yeah, it does. Okay. I love the flavor of it. Again, it's got that beautiful forest-like flavor. In the early spring, so by next week down by my creek, I have a lot and I like to gather the flowers. It's my last year's flowers and I make a perfume with it. And so I just put them in a jar and I do one with alcohol and I do one with oil. And I use it as a body oil through the year in the winter and put it in the bath, things like that. And then the spray, I just make a little spray with it and give it to my friends and, you know, a Labrador tea spray. And also the essential oil industry uses Labrador tea as well to make an essential oil. I love the smell. It smells exactly like puppy breath. It's great. Like it really, it's really quite amazing. It's really great. So some of the names for it is Hudson Bay tea and Trapper's tea. I call it storytelling tea because really every time we're around a campfire, whether in the communities, at home, with family, hanging out and drinking Labrador tea, the stories start to fly, you know, and people just open up. And there's a chemical in the plant called Lidol or Lidum. And, you know, it relaxes the body. So I think when we're in a relaxed state, we love to tell our stories. You know, we love to share and connect. And I really feel like this is one of those plants that does that. But, you know, up until recently, there hasn't been a lot of research on it. But, you know, people in the communities, the First Nation, Aboriginal people, all around the Boreal North knew what this plant was for. You know, and used it all the time in camp and fish camp for before they went to bed and to help them sleep. So yeah, of course you can see all the different things that this is used for against a staph. So you know, a lot of kids who have lice, what happens in the winter? They get lice, they're doing this. All of a sudden, you know, their fingernails have opened all those wounds and now the next thing you know, they have staph. And well, you know, so using something like the Labrador tea as a wash will help prevent that. When I was in Peru just recently and we were in the high Andes, there was a woman who came down from the mountains and they plant the potatoes, they call them the papas, and where they plant them, they call the fields the chakras. And so this woman came down and her son had sores all over his face and in his ears. And he had scabies. And this is a completely preventable disease, but the opportunistic diseases that can happen after because of the scratching and the open wounds are quite incredible. So they had heard that there was people that worked with herbs on the trip. And so the shaman that we were working with, who also works with plants, Juan, he said, Beverly. I went, yes, okay. You know, a shaman asks you to do something, you do it. So I worked with the woman and her child, and I had a few plants that I had picked, but we had just got into that part of the Queros. And so I had some ointment that I made, Greenade ointment, and it has like the usnea from the spruce trees and lots of different plants. She cleaned the wound, and she did that, and I gave her the ointment to put on it. And then I saw her a few days later in another village where Juan's family is, and I, through an interpreter, asked, you know, how's your son? And she said that he was healing. It was a lot better. So, you know, it was kind of amazing. And you go, wow, this is a really preventable thing. And so, you know, in North America, in America, we can absolutely use these kind of plants to prevent, really easy kind of diseases. So the twigs were also in a petri dish, active against colon carcinoma and lung carcinoma cells. So that's super exciting. Really exciting, because lung cancer is on the rise because of not just smoking but secondhand smoke and a lot of the chemicals that are in the air. So it's great. Rhodiola, does it grow in this area as well? Yeah. I have it in my water, so I'm going to have a slug of that because it's anti-aging. And I'm really 75. it's quite an incredible plant. In the north, most people call it rose root. And, its active ingredient are the rosevins. And you can taste them in the plant. It's that little bit at the end. Like, I'm just tasting it now, which is kind of astringent. And great for physical activity. So when I was going to Peru for a month beforehand, I was really upping my rhodiola intake because it helps with altitude sickness. It's quite an incredible plant, and it's adaptogen. So what an adaptogen is it helps your body to adapt to stress. And stress is probably the number one cause of illness right now in our lives. I mean, everything is fast, you know? Everything is now, it's instant. It's like, we want answers, give us a decision, make it happen. It's a stressful world right now. So by taking adaptogenic herbs, like ginseng is one of those herbs as well, devil's club is one of those herbs as well, by taking those and bringing them into our life, it really does help slow things down. And when things slow down, we make, you know, better, more sound decisions. And using herbs like rhodiola really help to lift your spirit. So you can drink it as a tea, and it tastes beautiful, has a rose-like flavor. And Swedish botanist Carl Linnaeus is the one who named that plant simply because he was drinking the tea of it, and he smelled the roots, and it was like this beautiful rose-like scent. So it's great for the heart as well, and it's an antioxidant and an aphrodisiac, so it's got lots of great uses. Of course, arnica grows in the mountains. Everybody's familiar with it. Of course, it's an amazing anti-inflammatory and a nervine and a stimulant, so it's fantastic topically. You use for any kind of aches or pains or anything of that nature. I've used it so many times, like getting my finger caught in the door of the car, you know, because you're doing too many things at once and you weren't taking your rhodiola and all of that. So yeah, I've had my finger caught in the door and put it on instantly. And like you think, oh my God, I'm gonna have like bruising and swelling, and how many times I've done that, and there's nothing. Like it, you know, so it brings, helps the blood flow come to the surface, creates more circulation, and then you end up with not having long-lasting effects of hurting yourself. And I've used it with my kids. I mean, everybody uses it. So it grows in abundance in the Yukon. In some places in Canada, it is an endangered species. So it's a different from region to region.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with herbalist and author Beverly Gray. Her presentation explores the use of wild medicinal and edible plants for health and healing, and draws on her years of experience gathering wild plants and weeds to use as food and medicines for the body, mind, and spirit. This talk was recorded May 29th at Alaska Pacific University and has been shortened for broadcast.
Of course, fireweed. Well, it was Epilobium angustifolia, but now the Latin name has changed to Chamarian angustifolia. And fireweed is our territorial flower in the Yukon, and I know it grows in abundance here because I saw it all day and was eating it. And I like to saute it in olive oil with a bit of garlic. Traditionally, people called it wild asparagus, and it was this big, and it is delicious. And, you know, you put a bit of cheese sauce on it, little spices, and it's delicious. So fireweed can be used in so many different ways. But again, going back to the doctrine of signatures, it tells us a lot about the plant, right? So because this plant, you know, takes the scarred land after a fire, and it brings new life and regeneration, you know, the roots make drainage channels, of course, bring in new nutrients. They take a charred land and they make a beautiful new vista, a new magenta landscape. And I always find that really exciting. So the plant, you know, so the part of the doctrine of signatures is fire. So the plant, it tells us that it's anti-inflammatory by how it grows. It's anti-flame because it's taking, quelling the flame of the fire and creating a whole new landscape. The plant, one of its recent studies done on the plant is that the roots, the leaves, and the flower are used for benign prosthetic hyperplasia, so a non-cancerous growth of the prostate gland, which often has men up and down all night going to the bathroom. So by using a tincture and making a tincture, now's the right time to do it, especially if you have it in your garden, it's because it's really easy to harvest the root, is just to get in there, follow the rhizome through the bottom, and you just pull them right out, and you have a bunch of leaves, and you have this beautiful root. And you wash it off, you chop up the root, those leaves, put them, you know, 2-to-1 of alcohol or vinegar to plant matter. So one part plant matter to two part menstruum or liquid. And then when the flowers come out, then you can add the flowers in and add a bit more of the liquid. So people often say to me, well, why not just make a tea? And you can do that. But you see, water doesn't have a preservative quality to it. So you make a tea and you have to, you know, you do it every day. And you can do that if you dry the plants. But, you know, when you tincture them right out of the ground, they're very potent. And also when you make a tincture, a vinegar tincture lasts for a year, but a alcohol tincture can last for 10 years. So sometimes, you know, life gets busy and throws things in your way. So it's like, make it now, and I can make enough for 10 years or enough to give to all my friends. And it's really great being an herbalist because then dinner conversation ends up, you talk about poop and prostates and all sorts of things. So, you know, it's like, oh, I have a tincture for that if you'd like. So anyway, it's pretty exciting. So then we have wild mint that grows in the Yukon. It grows, likes to grow near creeks and waters, likes wet feet. I love it because it's really, really potent and very, very strong. It's got a bitter edge as well to it. Of course, you know, as a woman, I always want to take plants that are high in iron and calcium and magnesium, and mint is one of those. So here, of course, is yarrow, which I was talking about earlier. It's also one of the plants that I put in my insect repellent. Yarrow, it's very blue when it's distilled. It is essential oil. It's got a chemical constituent in it called azelene, as does chamomile. So, of course, we know chamomile is a nervine, and it helps us to relax and feel rested. So yarrow also has that property to it. But it's also stimulating. So it's one of those plants that has, so when a plant is stimulating, but also calming, then at that point, you know, you go, well, what's the difference? So if I take it, like, it might make me hyper. And, you know, I don't want to be hyper. So it's one of those plants that works differently on everybody's body. So it's good for you to try it on yourself and know whether or not it's for you. Like valerian is the same way. Valerian root, a lot of people, it really stimulates them. And the worst thing I say to people is don't take valerian root before you have a big presentation at work the next day and you need to be rested. Like, try it on the weekend to just see, make sure that it really works with calming your nervous system. So it's really interesting, of all the teachings of yarrow, in Ireland they call it, in Gaelic, it's called Anthur Talún, and that means man of the soil. So it's really, its teachings are about, you know, it's a plant for men, and it's a warrior herb. And, you know, of course, all the old stories about Achilles' Milfolium are about Achilles, you know, about a warrior and his mother dipping him in the vat of yarrow, and then he ends up getting, you know, shot by an arrow in his Achilles' heel. And, but the rest of them was fine, you know. So it's a really protective kind of warrior herb. But in the Yukon, the elders there, and Ruth, my friend included, often talked about this plant as a woman's herb. And it's a plant that, of course, is great for every time in our menstrual cycles, from the first time we menstruate to the time we finish. And this plant is a styptic. So yarrow is a styptic, so it helps to stop bleeding. So like I told you earlier about the young girl who had it used the yarrow to stop the bleeding on her puncture wound. It can also be drunk as a tea for women going through menopause and have imbalanced menstrual cycles and have excessive bleeding. So by drinking the yarrow tea, it helps to stop that. And help to rebalance the menstrual cycle. The other thing that this plant does is it's great for colds and flu. So great, you know, we don't have echinacea that grows wild up in the north, so I really like to rely on yarrow. It really does work very quickly. You can make a blend of like a yarrow tea with spruce tips and lungwort, and you know, so there's a whole bunch of different plants that you can put together and make yourself a nice winter brew to keep yourself healthy. And that's the thing when you're making any kind of plant collection, it's like, what are your needs? Who's in your family? How are you going to use these, how do you want to use these plants, right? And then, of course, dandelion root grows everywhere. You've got dandelion. We spoke about it today. The roots are very, very healthy for the liver. And so when we drink the dandelion root tea, it just slows off all that excess winter, you know, excess winter bile that we get from eating a lot of meat, more heavy foods like you know, a lot more fats in our diet. So the leaves or the roots and the leaves are really high in minerals, and there's calcium, iron, copper, manganese, magnesium. We've got selenium, which is great, very anti-cancer, silicon, which is great for the joints, and of course zinc, which is great for the immune system, and an excellent source of vitamin A and B complex and C and D. So the roots are best harvested in the early spring or in the late fall. And in the fall, they're highest in a chemical constituent called inulin. And inulin has a lot of disease-fighting properties to it. So, you know, it's great because then you see the plant all summer, and in the fall, once the leaves die back, then you dig the plant. Because all of its energy right now, if you were to dig the roots, it'd be really, like, pithy, because all of its energy is into having these beautiful leaves and beautiful flowers. So the roots are great. If you dig the roots, you wash them off, you chop them up like this. Don't ever dry the roots whole because they'll start to mold, and especially because you've got a lot of humidity here. And I live in a place that has very low humidity, and mine molded. So that's always great to cut them up. And then if you want to make dandelion root coffee, you throw them in the oven, roast them. If you like a medium roast, a dark roast, you can do that with them. And then you grind them up and use it as an instant coffee. So, of course, the flowers are very high in vitamin D. Who would know, right? I mean, it tells us that. Just look at it. It's got such a great sunny disposition. The flowers are open during the day. They close at night. And so they're wonderful to eat. You can make, I eat them raw. This time of year, I'm always eating them raw. And but you can also saute them in a bit of olive oil, a bit of butter. People make batter and make fritters with them. There's just a lot to do with them. The leaves as well are great. Now the leaves are really quite bitter, but if you soak them in really cold water, take some of the bitterness out. The thing about bitter plants is, like I said earlier, we have way too much sugar in our diets. Even if you're not a sugar eater, it's still there, you know, and we have a lot of salt. But bitter and sour are flavors that we don't often bring into our body. And, you know, bitters, like, you know, used to get Marie Trebbin's bitters, and I put a recipe in my book for boreal bitters because I thought, you know, gather these bitters, gentian, dandelion, and, you know, if you have any digestive problems or imbalances, really, by taking the bitters before a meal, it helps you to fully digest, which means that you're actually getting all the minerals and vitamins that the food has to offer you. And when our digestive systems aren't working properly, we're not fully absorbing our food. So by using dandelion leaf or root, it really helps with that. And also, the leaves are a great diuretic. They're high in lots of different nutrients. And because it's a diuretic, you know, it's one that you wouldn't take if you were taking a pharmaceutical diuretic. So, you know, it's not good to do both. So again, if you're on any kind of prescription drugs and you're starting to take herbal medicine, it's always good to ask your pharmacist what the contraindications are, just to make sure that you're not going to harm yourself. And then, you know, you're losing too much water. So you just have to be really mindful of those kinds of things. I always say that dandelion is the world's most intelligent plant. And the reason I say that is because this plant started off, it was born in Eurasia, and it's moved pan-globally, and it's quite incredible. It's everywhere you go. So what is that telling us? As humanity, we're like, you know, putting chemicals on and trying to get rid of it. But really, it's there. It wants to help. And why does it grow around the world? It keeps saying, come on, pick me. I want to, you know, be part of you. Like, I want to help heal you, you know. So it's a really intelligent, incredible plant. And, you know, I live in the bush, and when my kids were little, I mean, you know, especially in the summers, I would be weeks before, or sometimes before I'd get to town. Always an excuse not to go to town. And those who live in the bush understand, it's like, oh, okay, I have to go to town. So I went to Canadian Tire, which is our big, you know, hardware, and there was a guy unloading all these bags, and it said weed food and had a picture of dandelion. I was like, wow, that's so progressive. We got dandelion food. And he's like, yeah, it kills them. It kills the dandelion. I'm like, it kills the dandelions. Well, why call it food, right? Like, why are you calling this food? So, it was one of those, like, moments of, oh, right. It's a different world. But so dandelion, honestly, pay attention to it. Use it. Make sure you're not picking it on the side of the road because there's lots of pollution. And make sure you're not picking it somewhere where people are putting pesticides on them. But if you do have them on your lawn, I encourage you to, you know, if you don't want them there, dig up the roots and do something with them. And if you don't want them, give them to somebody else. But don't put, you know, all of this chemical stuff on it, and get out there and use them. And of course, dandelion wine. Who doesn't like that? It's very good. Very, very good. Once you start harvesting herbs and start using them, you realize, wow, this is a real commitment. And, you know, that's the thing about a lot of people going to plant communities, say like mint, oh, wow, this is a great plant community. You're going to harvest like all of these plants. But then you realize you get them home and it's like, oh, I have to process these now, right? And it's a real thing, processing fatigue. It's like, oh my gosh, like, okay. So then you really learn to pace yourself and not over-harvest. And also, it's not good to over-harvest, so not for the plant community or the ecosystem. How exciting today when we were out on the farm, saw our first roses. They're probably a couple weeks away in the Yukon. Probably when I'm up here next, they'll be coming out. So it was great to see the wild rose. This is Rosa acicularis, and I mean, you guys have them everywhere. Of course, you eat the petals right off the plant. That's the best way. What we do with them is we gather them and infuse them in oil, and I make a wild rose petal face cream. And I'm sure there must be a local herbalist making some of that here, because if you're an herbalist in the area, you know, how could you not? Is anybody making this locally here? You make it? You make it? You make it as well? That's great. Yeah, so there are local people who are making plant medicines. So if you're not getting out yourself to do it, connect with the people who are making plant medicines. And you know, if they're not selling it, do an exchange with them. If they're selling it, support them. You know, go to your local farmer's market, all of those things. I'm sure I'm preaching to the converted, right? Like, you guys are all, you're all doing that already, I'm sure. But, you know, what we can do with ourselves is so great. Like, I love making rose petal water. And, you know, every time I go somewhere and I've got roses in my water, and I love it. And when the kids were little, they'd always make their own little, you know, rose tea by just putting it in the window and letting the sun infuse the petals and then drinking it. And of course, rose is all about the heart. It's all about love, right? And I mean, who doesn't love love, right? If we don't love ourselves, it's hard to move out into the world and fully feel love for humanity and for the planet. And so rose is a real conductor of that. It's really about connecting to life in a deeper way. So rose, of course, many different beautiful prose and poems about the rose. And of course, then the rose hips, our northern fruit. We have a difficult time growing any kind of fruits in the Yukon, maybe crab apples, but it's difficult. It's hard going. And you really have to be committed to grow anything that's fruit-wise. So of course, the rose hips are so great. And you know, one or three rose hips contain the same amount of vitamin C as one orange. And you know, that's kind of amazing, because you think about an orange coming from Florida to the Yukon or to Alaska, it's a big long way. So it's really nice when we can get our own. And somebody asked me the other day, oh God, like, do you take all the seeds out of your rose hips? Like, that's a really big commitment. And when I was a young herbalist, I did. I used to cut them open and I'd sit there and I'd scoop out the seeds. And of course I had my little laborers, you know, helping me. But now they, you know, now that they're adults, they're like, no, Mom, sorry, we're not helping you with that. But now I don't at all. I dry all my rose hips. I have an Excalibur dryer. You can get them online, and it's great because they have timers, they have temperature for herbs, they have temperature for jerky, they have temperature for meats, they have temperature for everything. So, you know, when you're going out hunting, or if you're going on a canoe or kayak or backwoods, backcountry hiking, you can dry all your own meats. When I was in Peru, I brought buffalo jerky with me, and it was great to have there, you know, and then to share with the local people, because they don't have buffalo. But yeah, so that's the best dehydrator on the market. I can't say enough about it. So if you're, you know, really wanting to get into making your own remedies, or even just making your own teas, it's really worth the investment. They're about $200, but worth it. So I dry them all, and then I know I'm getting, you know, again, more minerals, and it's from a really great source. So they're full of bioflavonoids, and it makes it a really, truly heart-smart food. And they really have a great ability to strengthen the capillaries and the connective tissue. So again, great for any kind of circulatory issues that you have in your body. So we've got the wild cranberry as well. I'm sure you guys have that here. And we always love cranberry season. Get out and pick them and eat them and pick them and eat them. They're great for the freezer, and something that you can eat year-round. And you know, you can see from the description all of its medicinal qualities. So it's very anti-inflammatory, antioxidant. It's an antiseptic, astringent, another diuretic. Not as much as dandelion, but it still has those qualities. And a refrigerant, which is always interesting. Mint's a refrigerant as well. A lot of people go, what do you mean by that? Well, it helps cool the body. So if you're menopausal, eat cranberries, drink mint tea. It really does help the body. And it's a great urinary antiseptic. Of course, we love to make cranberry muffins. Who doesn't? And you're getting all your minerals and vitamins. And the seeds are high in omega-3 fatty acids. And I like to make juice, so always making cranberry juice. So there's a cranberry smoothie in the middle and the others are juice. And yeah, that's really my fall favorite. And I feel like, yeah, sometimes I mix rose hip and other herbs in it, but it's just nice to have on hand, you know, and just be able to drink it. And they last a long time in the refrigerator. So you can make a batch and still have it for a few weeks. You know, it doesn't go off. It's because it's antioxidant. It's got its own preservative built right in. Of course, it's got vitamin C as well. And that's also a preservative. But I mean, it doesn't really last that long. I mean, because everybody drinks it. It's so good, right? And it's so good you want to share it with everybody. So of course we have wild blueberries, and we've got blueberries, we've got crowberries, we've got the cloudberries. Cloudberries are higher in the north, like to Dawson City, and up, you know, in the Old Crow area. There's not so much in the southern Yukon. When I was in Scandinavia, they were growing everywhere. It was wonderful to see, like, commercial preservatives of cloudberry everywhere. And it's like, wow, that's great, you know, because it's one that, you know, people covet their spots. And, you know, it's not, you know, you never see crowberry or cloudberry jam in the Yukon. Is anybody making it here commercially or...? No. Yeah, because it's like a really precious, precious plant. So the cloudberry, of course, is in the rose family. So raspberry leaf is one of the plants that you use during pregnancy, raspberry leaf. So you can use cloudberry leaf or rose leaves as well as a pregnancy tonic. We've got juniper. And juniper is, I call it my traveling vitamin. And so whenever I travel, I always have a little bag of junipers with me, and I'm eating the junipers as I go. And the reason is, of course, because it's very antibacterial. And so, you know, when you're on an airplane, it's kind of, you know, they turn off the air and you're breathing everybody's sickness and all of that. So by eating the juniper, you know, you help to prevent picking up any kind of opportunistic kind of diseases, but also, you know, it's very aromatic. So it really uplifts your spirit. But the thing, I call it my wild vitamin because, you know, it keeps you wild, right? If you eat one wild food every day, just even one berry, you're gonna keep that alive within you, right? Because we all are wild. And so by eating something that is wild, it's fantastic. And of course, you know, a lot of people use juniper for their wild game, right? You know, I take the dry juniper in my mortar and pestle, and I put it on salmon, and I put it on moose. Not so much on caribou. I like to use the soap berries on caribou, you know, when I can get it. The caribou, not the soap berries. There's lots of soap berries. It's quite an incredible plant. And in Europe, they've used it from the time immemorial as an analgesic. You know, anywhere you go in Europe, you see, like, the lineaments of juniper and things of that nature. So, great to eat, great to put on your food, great to make a tea for colds, flus. Another plant for urinary tract infections. And, it's really great to make like an oil. So you can make an oil, put it in your bath, you can make an alcohol rub, put it on your sore muscles. So it's just one of those really versatile pain relieving plants. So you mix it, say, with arnica and willow. You've hit the ball out of the park. You've got a great remedy for pain relief. And, you know, who doesn't want that, especially if you have, like, sciatica or anything of that nature? It really works well. I have a lot of people who, you know, have arthritis who will take that kind of remedy and put it on their hands before they go to sleep. And, they can actually sleep. It doesn't cure it, but it takes the pain away to allow them to be able to sleep. So we've got raspberry leaf as well. Raspberry leaf, I talked about earlier, and raspberry fruit and leaves. I like to use the leaves for women, great for excessive menstruation, painful menstruation. It's a great uterine tonic. Midwives all over the world use the leaves in that way. And it's also great as an anti-diarrheal. So if somebody, it's great in the bush, and as I've worked with outfitters and people like that nature and been out in the middle of the bush, and people are like, oh my gosh, you know, now they've got diarrhea. So it's like, okay, we'll either take the strawberry leaves or the raspberry leaves, chew them or make a tea, and it'll help to bring that into balance. Again, antioxidant. Everybody's got to love that. Anything that helps your body bring in more oxygen is a good thing. The one thing I notice about drinking raspberry leaf tea, though, it does, especially when you're drinking it during your pregnancy, you know, one cup for the first trimester, two for the second, and three for the third. By the time you get to the third trimester, you're like, this is so astringent and drying. I never want to see a cup of it again, you know, until your next pregnancy, and then you start drinking it again. So that's why tincturing it is good, because it really creates like a dry kind of a mouth. Of course, everybody loves raspberries. really brings us back into our childlike self when we're harvesting them. And last year we buried my father in the Maritimes in New Brunswick, and our family gravesite there, it's on the sea next to the North Atlantic. And my nephew and I were picking eating the raspberries, and I said, wow, like, we're eating berries that have been fertilized by the bodies of our ancestors. Is that not incredible? And he said, yeah, you can't buy value like that. So I thought, oh yeah, I love the youth. So, you know, the raspberries always make me smile for that reason and other reasons as well. So of course, you know, in the kitchen, we can bring all these wild plants in. We can make jams and jellies and chutneys. We can make fruit leathers, soups and salads. Of course, juices and smoothies, breads and pastries and spices and condiments. So there's lots to do. And of course, you know, the medicinals, we can make herbal teas, essential oils, tinctures, vinegars, syrups, medicinal oils, salves and creams, and capsules and vitamins. So yeah, like I said, an essential life skill, really great knowledge to have and to bring into your home if you don't already have it. And of course, you know, a lot of the spas now are using plants. You go to, like, Aveda is a big company, and they're using, you know, lots of different wild plants. There's a Canadian, I would say, nutraceutical kind of company that makes makeup, and they use Labrador tea in it now, which is kind of amazing, you know. So there's lots out there, but you can do this at home for yourself. So you can make your own massage oils, foot soaks, baths, creams, and lotion. And the thing I always say to people is, like, you know, if you're going to make a foot soak, do a face steam first, right? So do your face steam and get all in there, and, you know, it makes your face feel really clean. And then bring it down and put your feet in it and just really, you know, soak your feet and relax. And it's kind of amazing, actually, when you soak your feet, how relaxing it really is. I'm always amazed by it. I don't know why, but I am. So plants, of course, have so much to teach us, and every plant's life cycle is a journey, and it really is much like our own, and we're both filled with the energy of spirit that links us to the generations who preceded us, and it carries our knowledge of our ancestors. We root in Mother Earth, and our flowers are an expression of our joy, and our seeds blow in the wind when we share our knowledge and our ideas. The spirit of the earth is calling us together to simplify, to return to our roots, and live in a symbiotic relationship, because really now is the time, because nature heals. So thank you very much for all being here on this beautiful night, and it's been great being here. Thank you to all of you guys.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with herbalist and author Beverly Gray. Her presentation explored the use of wild medicinal and edible plants for health and healing, and drawed on her years of experience gathering wild plants and weeds to use as food and medicines for the body, mind, and spirit. This talk, shortened for broadcast, was hosted by Alaska Public Media along with Alaska Pacific University and was recorded May 29th at Alaska Pacific University. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.